together. Many words have passed between, and the feelings that we shared are all behind.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, January 29, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find them on their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading. We finished the book of 1 Corinthians, so we're going to pick up in, let's see, the Gospel of John tonight. So starting off with the first chapter of the Gospel of John, read by Alexander Scobie.
The Gospel according to St. John, chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake, He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time, the only begotten Son which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. And this is the record of John, when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, Who art thou? And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, I am not the Christ. And they asked him, What then? Art thou Elias? And he saith, I am not. Art thou that prophet? And he answered, No. Then said they unto him, Who art thou? That we may give an answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself? He said, I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, Make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Isaiah. And they which were sent were of the Pharisees. And they asked him, and said unto him, Why baptizest thou then, if thou be not that Christ, nor Elias, neither that prophet? John answered them, saying, I baptize with water, but there standeth one among you, whom ye know not. He it is, who coming after me is preferred before me, whose shoes latchet I am not worthy to unloose. These things were done in Bethabara beyond Jordan, where John was baptizing. The next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him, and saith, Behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. This is he, of whom I said, After me cometh a man which is preferred before me, for he was before me. And I knew him not, but that he should be made manifest to Israel. Therefore am I come baptizing with water. And John bare record, saying, I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and it abode upon him. And I knew him not, but he that sent me to baptize with water, the same said unto me, Upon whom thou shalt see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, the same is he which baptizeth with the Holy Ghost. And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. Again the next day after, John stood, and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he saith, Behold the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned and saw them following, and saith unto them, What seek ye? They said unto him, Rabbi, which is to say, being interpreted, Master, where dwellest thou? He saith unto them, Come and see. They came and saw where he dwelt, and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two which heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first findeth his own brother Simon, and saith unto him, We have found the Messias, which is, being interpreted, the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. And when Jesus beheld him, he said, Thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas, which is by interpretation a stone. The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee, and findeth Philip, and saith unto him, Follow me. Now Philip was of Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip findeth Nathanael, and saith unto him, We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said unto him, Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip saith unto him, Come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him, and saith of him, Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. Nathanael saith unto him, Whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, Before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Nathanael answered and saith unto him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God, thou art the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said unto him, Because I said unto thee, I saw thee under the fig tree, believest thou? Thou shalt see greater things than these. And he saith unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Hereafter ye shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
We have a whole pot full of questions, John, and somewhere in there I'll have an announcement.
Okay, well, let's spill that pot.
Okay, the first question is from someone who's looking for some ideas to enforce the quo warranto due to a lack of response. The case is an eviction. The state is California. The plaintiff does not exist based on proof positive that I was able to obtain among other common denominator among all other non-judicial foreclosures. All efforts to find the insurance companies of the perpetrators did not produce any results. Any comments or ideas?
Well, you know, the I don't know if he had filed or she had filed non-judicial foreclosure with us, and I guess they're doing their own quo warranto. We've done a quo warranto also. We've done a few of them, I believe. And they just don't respond. They don't care. They ignore us. They got the guns. They take control of our judicial process. So right now, it's very difficult to get anything through, especially on a federal level. You know, we got some things going on the state level here. We'll see if we get better traction in the state than we do in the federal. But the problems that we really have to be dealt with in the federal court. And that's why at some point in time, we're going to be doing something going after all of the judiciary, the federal judiciary, that is. They just ignore the quo warranto. They ignore everything we do, as a matter of fact. Even our indictments, they ignore the habeas corpuses. They ignore our challenges and non-judicial foreclosures. And they ignore our quo warranto. But you know, time is coming. I mean, we can see what they're doing to Trump. They just don't care. If they do what they're doing to Trump, they've been doing that to us for a long time. So a lot of people don't realize that. We've lost our courts quite some time ago. There is no constitution in the courts. There is no Bill of Rights in the courts. But I do perceive that they'll be back soon, as soon as, again, we get back to devolution playing out. Okay, next.
Okay, does NLA recommend a water filter that has a warranty and or guarantee? Our Alexapeer water filter unit does not have any guarantee or warranty. We bought extra filters for our Alexapeer water filter unit and stored them for future use. However, the stored filters did not allow the water to go through the filter after we installed the new filters. Does NLA know that the only return policy for the Alexapeer water filter unit and filters is a 30-day, no-questions-asked return policy on unopened and unused products? There is no benefit to storing a water filter if the unit does not filter water when you need filtered water.
Okay, I have no knowledge of that. I don't know if Gerard has any knowledge of that. You know, we don't have any business partners that might sell that kind of an item. We have very, very few business partners, which you can find on the right-hand side of a website. Nothing with a water filter that I'm familiar with or anything of that nature. So I don't have an answer for that. Gerard, unless you're familiar with what they're talking about, I'm not.
Yeah, that's the one that we have on the website, isn't it, John?
I'm looking there now. I didn't know we had. Whereabouts?
At the very bottom on the right side of the pages. It's one of the things recommended.
Okay, we see the silver lung. It looks like a water filter, but it's not. I don't see it. And I'm not aware of it either. Let's see.
Well, we need to check that out, John, because I checked it the other day and it's there, and we need to find out what the story is.
Yeah, but can you tell me where it's at that I can locate it? I mean, we have the silver lung that looks like a water, you know, it deals with ultimately something different, though. It deals with colloidal silver. Okay, right here, water treatment storage. Okay. I guess we put this up a long time ago. I don't even remember that. I don't even know if we've done much of any sales with this. But in any event, the best I can tell you would have to contact the people who sold it, which it's an 8 phone number, which is on their website, is 866-229-0927. I'll repeat that, 866-229-0927. Maybe there's something in there for packaging that got left in there and is blocking the water, but I don't know. You'd have to call them. So, okay, next question.
I have an announcement I'll stick in here. As you all probably know that are on the call and many more NLA members, John and Gerard were interviewed by SGNON on January 17th, I believe it was. That was due in large part to the efforts of one of our members, Andrew Media. She follows SGNON and has talked with him on a number of occasions. She suggested that he should interview John and Gerard, and after further discussions with SG, we got in touch with him through Andrew Media's contacts, and we have had that interview that has garnered a large number of new members for NLA. Typically, we get about 10 members a week. It's a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. We've had 115 new members in that week and a half. So that's almost 15 times the normal number that we would have since the 17th. So we owe many thanks to Andrew Media for her great work in making that interview happen. And then on to more questions, John.
Okay.
What is preventing the county sheriffs of Texas to declare a posse comitatus and get the local militia to stand up to the feds for taking down their razor wire, just like they did for Clive and Bundy?
Education. I thought the same thing. If only they were educated, they could stop this whole thing. Education. They're not educated. They don't know the common law. They don't know the procedures of the court. They don't understand due process. They have no knowledge of any of these things. They rely totally on the county attorney to advise them in anything legal. And might as well give the badge over to the county attorney then if he's going to make the decisions. It's a major problem. But education. And that's why, look at everybody that's out in Texas, anybody in Texas, you should organize the people and get the book, Government by Consent, out to your sheriff and have a meeting with that sheriff after you give him the gift, or give him the gift and have a meeting at that point. But get that book out, and if you do get the book out, just make sure that you follow the process, for getting a book out to the sheriff. Underneath the sheriff, it says, Join Our Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. If you click on that button, it'll give you some information. You can click here to buy the Government by Consent book. You can click here to download Sheriff Dar Leaf's endorsement letter, which would be printed out and folded and put into the book. Also, you can download National Liberty Alliance's letter to the sheriffs. You download that and fold it and put it into the book, and then you don't have to fold it because we're now using the larger books. We're doing the 8.5 by 11, which is a hard cover book, and it sells even cheaper than the paperback. And of course, the quality is far, far superior. So get your sheriffs, get people together in your state. Get your sheriff the education that they need. Get them connected to National Liberty Alliance. Have them come up and look under the sheriff's tab and start getting involved. Create committees of safety in your county and organize and connect with your sheriff and follow the process that we've laid out under start a committee of safety. We have a breadcrumb trail here. And at the same time, follow that breadcrumb trail in forming your committee of safety. Download the handbook on how to create a committee of safety, how to structure it. And at the same time, everybody should be educating themselves by clicking on the education tab starts here and following through that process. And so follow the breadcrumb trails that we put together on those two issues. So get your sheriff a backbone. A backbone is a combination of an educated sheriff. And other sheriffs working with them that are also educated. Because three or four sheriffs coming together in counties working on a problem, and four or five or six or even more is even more powerful. But it only takes a couple of three sheriffs maybe to really get some real power and authority and kick the feds out. There is no authority for the military to come in to do anything other than the work on the border. So the state could prevent them from entering into the state because that's their state. You can also, through the sheriff, prevent any federal agent from entering into the state because that's their job. Unless they have a court order that's lawful, that's gone through due process in order to do something, but they couldn't get anything really necessarily for dealing with the border. We're a republic, and the republic, the federal government is supposed to secure a republican form of government, and they haven't been doing that. The state has not only has a right, I wouldn't call it a right, they don't have a right, they have a duty. Okay, they don't have a right, people have rights. They have a duty to protect their borders, and even to the ability to call up the militia. And I know in New York State's constitution, it reads that all the people are responsible to protect the borders of the state of New York. And so all the people can be called upon. I mean, that's really funny when you think about it, because they take your guns away, and what are you going to do to defend your borders? That is the job of the... go ahead.
I don't know if this can be verified, but I had heard that there was something like 23 governors of different states that have signed letters of support for Texas. Now, Abbott is not a really good guy, but he has to do the right thing because he's pretending to be that conservative Republican. So he has to go through the motions, and he is. So this is a good thing, and I do believe it's another move by Trump and the White Hats to insulate Trump, because what's going to happen is the Democrats are going to call the military in, and then I think what's going to happen is they're going to take the military over under devolution, and it won't be Trump and the White Hats calling the military. It's going to be the Democrats that call them in, but they're going to turn those tables because they've already got all the stuff that they need for this insurrection that's going on. We are in World War III. We have an enemy within. Trump signed all that paperwork before he left. It's actually in force now. He is the commander-in-chief, whether people want to acknowledge that or not. And that's all going to come out all in a day. You're going to see this thing turn in a day, and I don't think you got to worry too much about how it's going to come out, because it's nobody can stop what's already been put in motion. And I believe that they took all the bait that they gave them, and this is part of the plan. That's what I believe. So I haven't verified, whole thing with 25 governors. What's that?
I've read that it's up to 27 governors now who are banded together.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, because what's going to happen is
it is building, because I heard 20, 25, and Jan just mentioned 27, so it is building. So it's interesting to watch.
No, this way there, he doesn't have to declare martial law. We're already in it. I mean, once there's a state of emergency that's still in effect that Biden renewed when Trump left. Because Biden's not really the president. He's doing what he's told. And that emergency order that Trump, where he can take the businesses and the money and everybody that's helped anybody, usurp America, and they can go into all their, anybody that did business with them or anybody that had their fingers on it. And that's what their problem is, because they've locked up so much of their money. They don't have a lot of money to start. I mean, that's why you're going to see false flags, because that's all they can do at this point. They can't do the things they used to do because their money laundering in the Ukraine was shut down, and a lot of money, I mean, the only money laundering that they have now is coming across that border in the form of trafficking, and that's getting cut down pretty much. All these underground things are being discovered and closed down, and that's their income, believe it or not. That whole business is bigger than drugs. I mean, there's still drugs coming through. There's still fentanyl. That's still a problem. But that's a big, big problem. Except when you look at human trafficking and child trafficking, to believe that that's bigger, that makes more money than illegal drugs, that's disgusting. And that's what's going on. And that's what Trump was committed to stopping. So it's happening right now under our noses. And of course, the news media, the liberal news media, is not going to report on it. World War III will not be televised on NBC or CNBC or any of that until they're forced to, until EBS, when they shut down the mainstream media and take over and actually do the devolution.
And the big financial thing that people have been waiting on just happened the other day, with Evergrande being called out for $300 billion. So we're looks like we're at the precipice, gentlemen.
It's amazing. It's amazing how clueless most of the people are. That they're just, it's like the Bible says, they'll be eating and drinking and taking wives, because that's exactly what they're doing. They have no clue. They're buying stocks and everything, and that whole thing is going to go. Stock market's going to go up initially, because all these guys that launder money, they've been shut out, and the only place that they can put their money is in the stock market right now. They need to hide it, and so it's going to make the stock market look like it's going up, but it's a fault. Inflation is unbelievable, and they're not going to stop it. And the stock market's going to spike up, but it's going to drop. It's going to, any day, it's going to just, the bomb's going to come out of it. So may you live in interesting times, people. We're in them.
Okay, back to you, Jan.
You mentioned that there were, major monies, the most made from child trafficking. There's 40,000 kids in this country disappear every year, and they go into that mess as well as the adrenochrome production.
That's been going on for a long time, hasn't it, Jan?
And
yes,
it's 800,000 worldwide. That's a horrific number.
Actually, Jan, I believe it's 800,000 a year here in the States, and
eight million
worldwide. So, yeah.
800,000 a year worldwide.
No, 8 million a year worldwide, 800,000 here.
In America, really, that's why.
Yeah, they do us real hard. They do us real hard. Every 40 seconds, an American child goes missing. You'd think we could do a little bit better, but we're also number one in first-day deaths in all developed countries. We got serious issues, I yield.
The news loves to get out bad news as much as possible. It's amazing that they don't even report this kind of thing, because the people should be aware of this. And, of course, that would create a concern and a looking into, I guess. Okay, back to you, Jan.
Yeah, John, if there could be one person, you mentioned educating the people in Texas, if there could be one person that you could start with to educate, who would that be? Who's the focal point, a name or a title or occupation, who would you start with?
The people. That's it, the people. Look,
there must be one person.
I'm sorry, say that again?
there must be one person that you could start with to spread
it. It starts with one person in your county to start to do something, and then it becomes two and so on. But as far as an elected individual is concerned, it's the sheriff. The sheriff is the chief law enforcer of the county. He can cut the feds off at the pass, so to speak, and send them right back out of town.
That
sheriff needs to understand his power and authority, and he should demand of the feds, before they come in to serve any warrant, come see me first. I want to make sure it's legal, and I'm going to go out with you if it is legal to make sure that it is fulfilled properly and lawfully. But the sheriffs don't do that. They don't know to do that. The feds don't belong in the states at all, unless they're in on business. But they should be notifying the sheriff of that business that they're going to arrest him.
And that's why we have the government by consent program to get that book in every sheriff's office in the United States.
And this is not just for Texas. This is for every state. This is the most important thing you could do. Look, if you're not going to do anything, get your sheriff the book. If you're not going to do anything, if you want to do something, anybody who is truly interested in saving this republic, step up, start educating yourself, follow the breadcrumb trails under the tab, Education Starts Here at NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and then start working on, start a committee of safety and follow that, those breadcrumb trails, and work with us to save the republic. I assure you, I guarantee you, there is no other way to save the republic unless the people step up and exercise their unalienable right of government by consent.
And it's common sense, common law. I mean, think about it. The sheriff is the highest elected law enforcement official. That's not the state police. The state police serve at the behest of the governor. They're his private police force, technically. You know, they're almost like a municipal police. But, you know, the sheriff answers to we the people, and that's it. And his constituents and he's just the highest elected law enforcement official. It's so easy to, nobody can argue with that. There's nobody higher elected in law enforcement than the sheriff. End of story, period, full stop.
And as our front page makes clear, the very first words you read, only the people can save America. Donald Trump cannot save America. There's no elected official that can save America. There's not even a sheriff that can save America. Only the people can do it. And because, you know, Donald Trump might be able to take out the deep state, and maybe we'll see a lot of people at the end of the short rope. Maybe we'll see a lot of people go to jail, and maybe things could be cleaned up. But it'll only deal for a short while if the people don't, because someone's got to fill the void of watching the government. And the only ones that could really watch the government is the people. And that therein is the purpose of the committees of safety. Our founding fathers established this long before we even became the states. So while we were in colonies, they exercised and controlled everything through committees of safety. The committees of safety sent the individuals that they felt that was qualified to the legislators of the state, or the colony, shall I say. It was formed almost like a state, but to the colonies. They had their own legislators making their own law. They ran their own courts. And so on and so forth, and that's what we the people need to be doing. So, you know, the people don't know how. By consent, and I speak to myself first. I didn't know how to have government by consent. I know now how to have government by consent, because I've researched it and put it together in a book called Government by Consent. Our website is filled with much of the work that's in that book. And, of course, also the court access and the common law to understand due process. I didn't know how to have due process. I didn't understand the court system. I didn't understand the Constitution very well, the Bill of Rights, until I started researching. Therein is the purpose of the book, Government by Consent. And we also, of course, have that course, Education under Education Starts Here. You can start the court access and the common law course, which is available at all times once anybody signs into this course. And it's a bunch of videos. It was done live, and this page lays out all the information covered in this course. So if people, you know, want to save America, join the committees of safety and get educated and get a book to your sheriff That's the very first thing maybe you need to do is get that book to the sheriff. You know, keep your, you have a meeting with the sheriff, but you can give him the book, but you don't want to spend too much time at the beginning because you really want him to read the book and come back at another time. You should be forming your committees of safety so that you can meet with him together and introduce yourself as the committee of safety and the purpose of the committee of safety. And you've already established somewhat of a relationship by getting him an education. So that's what needs to be done. Okay, Sam.
I have asked on past occasions for the form number that exempts an employee or provides for an opt-out between an employee and employer for IRS withholding, and still haven't been able to get the form number. This has come up a number of weeks running.
Right. Yeah, if you're asking us for that form, I wouldn't. I've seen the form. We don't provide that form. And I strongly suggest people not to file that form. All you're doing is really letting them know that you need to be dealt with at some time in the future when they feel that they're going to come out after people. And they already have to some degree come out after certain people. But you're not going to get anywhere with that. Go notify them. I can say some people, I'll just say that, some people who just stopped paying in. The problem is to get your employer to stop giving in. They're not going to do that because they got the gun to their head. But if you're self-employed, acting as a contractor of some type, you can deal with your own problem and just ignore them, as I know of others that have done for 30, 40 years and really haven't been bothered, and some recently being bothered. But there is a strategy and an argument that could be made that could be a little frightening to them because they don't want it on record. We do provide that kind of information inside the course, by the way. But definitely I would not fill that form out. I strongly suggest anybody that is heading that way take a different path. That's not the one. And anyway, the other thing is this. Look, you're already in the game at this point. You're already dealing with them today. You're going to be filing your papers by this April. I think April is the month. I really wouldn't know. But anyway... April is the month, I believe, that you have to get your taxes in. You're probably going to conform if you have been in the past and you're looking for a way out. Well, after this year, you'll have a way out because the IRS, I am absolutely convinced that the IRS will not exist next year. I'm absolutely convinced that the Fed will be totally annihilated by next year. So we really don't have to worry too much about it. But you do have to deal with the problems of the day today. If you don't file, your safest way is also a dangerous way, too, because you've been reported to by your employer if you're employed. And so you get your papers, and you've got to fill out your papers and file it in. If you don't do that, by the time the end of the year comes, they'll probably be on to you and start sending letters. But again, by the end of the year, they'll be going out of business anyway. But the thing with the IRS is answering every paper and requesting more information because you're building a case. And again, I don't know. I would continue to build a case even if you're just starting to build a case by not paying or something or if you're having problems with the IRS. Because once you ignore them, then they're going to turn around and say you acquiesced. And that's what they'll take into court as you acquiesce to everything, okay? But if you respond to every single letter they send and ask questions, I don't understand this and I don't understand that. Can you explain here? Can you tell me where the law is there? And they're just going to continue to ignore you and continue sending these form letters, form number one, form number two, form number three, form number four, and so on. But it takes quite a few... communications between the IRS and the individual that they're trying to steal from. It takes quite a few communications before they actually move to some kind of a collection process. And if it's not a lot of money, they'll just move right to a collection process, steal your bank account and take your money. If it's something really big, they'll take you into court because they're probably going to want to try to put you in jail as well as seize your bank account and take everything you got. So... they are very dangerous people to deal with, and I definitely would suggest extremely strongly If you don't understand due process, if you don't understand the law, if you don't understand the strategy to lay out and defend yourself against these people, show them that there is no law. Even in their law, there is no law. And their law is really focusing in on someone else. It's not focusing in on you. If you understand those things, at least you can defend yourself. But if you don't understand those things, you're only putting yourself in jeopardy and as sheep before the slaughter. And when they come out for you, if they do, lawyers aren't going to be able to defend you. And if you don't have knowledge, you're not going to be able to defend yourself. So anybody going up against this Leviathan, I'll call it, if you don't understand how to deal with them, you're playing in very dangerous grounds. All right, next. And by the way, we do cover a lot of this in the course. So, that course is found under Education Starts Here. Come down to Court Access in the Common Law. You click on this tab right here, which is the page I'm on now. But once you come into that course, you'll see these other two tabs, Court Access Recorded Video Course and Court Access Table of Contents. And anybody who wants to get a little taste of this course, all you got to do is go to the page here, to the Court Access in the Common Law course sign-up page, okay? And down on the bottom of this thing, or towards the bottom anyway, we not only give a table of contents down here, but we actually give you the first 3 or 4 hour part of the course. So you can click on that and see exactly, what kind of information we're given and how this course is going to proceed as time goes on. So anyway, I guess that's about it. So repetition. And okay, Dan, back to you.
A few years back when Brent Winters was on the call, he mentioned scripture when it came to usury and not taxing a man's sweat. What book in the Bible can that verse be found as proof that taxing one's labor is immoral and unlawful?
So before I answer, I'll try to answer that question. Terry, keep an eye out for Brent. I did speak with him, had a conversation today. We're talking a little bit here and there. He said he was going to try to get on tonight's call. I know he had some problems because he had some computer problems and he's lost the contact information to come into our...
Okay, will do.
I don't know. Have you been able to give him the codes and stuff?
No, I haven't been able to. He hasn't contacted me at all. He tried and I wasn't here, and then I tried several times and I never got him.
Okay, we'll see what you can do about it, and we'll keep an eye on here.
Will do.
See if he's coming in. I don't know exactly where in the Bible that would be. I am familiar with some information on that. I just don't recall where those verses are. If Fred comes in, we can ask him, and maybe by next week, if he doesn't come in, maybe next week I'll take a look.
John, the workman is worth his hire. There's no mention of taxes there other than paying the man what you told him you were going to pay him.
But the Bible does speak about not necessarily taxes, but interest particularly. The Bible does talk about, but paying taxes, I'm not too sure. I'd have to look. I don't know. As a matter of fact, the Lord said to pay the taxes. Give unto Caesar that which is Caesar. But that would be lawful taxes.
I don't know if you remember. I think it was Larry Beecraft. I could be wrong with that. I have to look it up. But there's a section in the IRS code that talks about your deductions, and they never. It's like 1B or something in the very beginning that they never talk about. And basically, your labor to your boss is a trade-off. And you're trading labor for pay. Well, your labor, you can write it off. It's your expense. So it comes right off the top. It's not taxable. If you read their code with the definition of taxable income, it's the gain on money. It's interest. It's dividends. It is not money that you earn.
That is applied towards corporations, and they call you a corporation, so I guess that's how they get into that. But go ahead.
Right, but look, a lot of it is enforced because there's ignorance. And people just do what they think they're supposed to do, even though they're ignorant. There is a form that says that you can sign out of paying income tax and demand your employer not to take it out. But the employers are so stupid, they don't believe it, and they keep taking it out, and it ends up that you have to sue your employer. Well, that doesn't do you very good if you're in a job that you don't want to lose.
Lenny followed his protocol, his program, and Lenny did exactly that as an employer. And he lost a lot. He lost his business. He almost went to jail. A lot of things happened to him, and he followed that protocol. Okay, and you know who I'm talking about, Lenny Roberta. Is that his last name, Roberta?
Oh yeah, Lenny Roberta. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, he followed that program, that protocol, and got. They don't honor it. Look at. They don't honor anything. You're a slave, pay the slave tax, and that's it. We're going to throw you in jail. You hear me? That's it. That's how they deal with the people.
But they still stick to the rules of the game as far as constitutionality. They have to get your permission. And they always, by putting information reports in, like 1099s and W-2s, what you're doing is saying, I am a taxpayer.
Well,
you know, who's that guy that said, I only work with non-taxpayers?
Yeah, remember, but again, everybody has.
Attorney, he never lost a case. As long as people didn't have money coming in, going in with W-2s and W-4s, he defended every single income tax case and won because he did not. You did not go to him if you were reporting income because he can't defend you then.
Yeah, I don't know that I could believe that he won every case.
Every case, because if you followed his instructions and you did what he told you to do, then you weren't admitting to being a taxpayer.
Yeah, but the question becomes, without mentioning names, I mean, how did you find that out? Did he tell you that, or did he lay out the cases and show you the cases? In this case,
he had a thing. I remember we used to go, what was his name?
I remember, and I don't think we should mention his name. The problem is there's a lot of people selling a lot of plans, a lot of programs, a lot of things.
Well, when you're self-employed and you stop paying, they don't come after you. Why?
It becomes very dangerous. Okay,
they don't come after you when you're self-employed and you stop reporting because there's no reports going in. They don't have a leg to stand.
But they eventually catch up with you. That's the problem. But again, that's the best way to do it. Okay, the best way to do it is be self-employed.
It's the easiest way.
Dealing with it because there's nobody reporting on you and you don't really exist. But they will eventually pick up on you. But not anymore, I don't think, because like I said, this is going to be the next year. Here's the thing, okay? If you were to do some of these things that some of these people are selling to do, or even the things that we suggested you could do, I mean, we suggested only in a course. I'm not going to get into telling people how to beat the system. I'm not going to tell the people how to lay out a case in the court that they don't want, and they'll throw you out for that alone. It's happened to me already. And without giving you the information to defend yourself, and that's court access in the common law. If you can't defend yourself in court, if you don't know how to defend yourself on paper, okay, and you have to do it formally, you have to answer every single thing that they throw at you. You got to respond to everything. Otherwise, I'm telling you, they build up all this thing. You acquiesce to this. You acquiesce to that. You acquiesce to this. We send you these forms, and you acquiesce again. You know, it goes on and on and on. So that's part of the due process protection. Okay, but nevertheless, these people are just evil, and they're doing everything they can, and every time people do, you know, figure out a way to defeat them and put them in a position that they have to back off, then they get together and figure out how we're going to deal with the next guy that comes up with this kind of a program or plan. And that's what's been going on for years on end now. But there is things in their law that you can use against them, like who is liable for income tax is the key question. And they give you the answer, and you can go down that rabbit hole quoting all their codes and show that you're not there. So that is something you can do.
That was the IRS agent, Joe Bannister, that left the system, and he still doesn't pay. But I think whatever he was doing, they closed those loopholes.
But they lost the cases. They lost the cases with We the People, with Robert Schultz and all that. And I was in that case myself. You were in that case, I believe, too.
Yeah.
But they lost the case on this.
Joe Bannister, the ex-IRS agent?
Oh, yeah. He may have won some cases in the beginning, but they've lost everything since. And remember that guy out in Middletown, I think he was. I don't want to bring up names. he was very involved, and then they beat him up with the taxes. We went down to his court case one time and were listening in a little bit and trying to think of, if you remember this, who this guy is. Again, I don't want to bring a name up.
Right.
But he was going through the whole thing and using the stuff to Bannister and so on and so forth, a lot of the paperwork and the things that we the people used with Robert Schultz, and he lost it all.
Remember that guy, Al? We used to call all the time. He was like down south of us. I don't want to say his last name.
Yeah. Is that the guy we went out to Long Island with?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
He was very active, but he told me, he said, listen, he said, when you get into a fight with them, he said, they're going to come at you through left field. You won't even know it's them. He said, but they'll ruin your life. Next thing you know, there's a car accident. Your kid dies, this, that. He said, they're evil. Evil. And he said, they'll come out of left field because this is what happened to him. And he realized that all these horrible things were happening, that it was them, you know, trolling him and doing all this stuff because he was fighting them. And he was like, he was of the opinion that, you know, there's no consequences for them and there's no controls. And so you really can't beat them legally because they're going to come at you like the mob and they put a hit on you, so to speak, you know.
Well, who do you think the mob learned from?
And they don't put a hit on you. They kill your wife. They kill your kids. I mean, they just have this thing. They want to make an example out of you or a lesson, I think.
Well, that is true, but I don't think they'll come out to try to kill you for the IRS thing. For other things, they might. But they do go after your family, and I could tell you because I have firsthand knowledge of that.
Mm-hmm.
They go after your children. They go after your spouse. Like I said, you know, you don't want to give that the IRS any information at all. If you want to bail out, there's only one way to bail out, and that is become a contractor of some kind, get a business, and you know, it depends what kind of business, but because if you're doing business where you have to deal with sales tax, that could be a problem too, because that could send a flag up to the feds on the IRS, say, well, these people aren't paying taxes, you know. But anyway, being a contractor and taking care of your own business is about the only way you kind of drop off their radar. And then, you know, you could be off their radar for 20 years. I know I was for 20 years before they even realized to start to come out after you. So that's the only way I would say. But if you send a paper in and you do it that way, I'm telling you, you're going to be put on a list. And they're going to want to make you an example of the way they come out for you. They did it to Lenny.
Yeah.
And of course, that was from the perspective as an employer. So, anyway, let's go to the next question, I guess.
If an attorney is a co-counsel for a corporation, can he represent that corporation in a lawsuit, or will it have to be another attorney or law firm that is not affiliated?
Are you talking about, I don't understand the question in a sense. If an attorney is a co, what now?
Co-counsel.
For who or for what? For a corporation.
Let me read it again. If an attorney is a co-counsel for a corporation, can he represent that corporation in a lawsuit? Or will it have to be another attorney or law firm that is not affiliated to that corporation?
Well, I really don't understand the question because, first of all, a co-counsel is someone that goes into the court and is assisting another counsel. There's like first seat and second seat type thing. But that's a co-counsel. If they're representing a corporation in that issue, whatever that may be, and there's another issue up, they can represent that corporation. Corporations must be represented by lawyers, by a bar attorney. You know, you can't represent yourself if you're a corporation. And that's why I always did a lot of work with DBAs. And because as a DBA, you can go in and represent yourself and make your own arguments and so on and so forth. But again, it's hard to understand how that question, because I don't understand what they mean by a co-counsel. You know, I mean, I just don't understand what they're trying to say.
Okay.
That's the best I can answer, anyway.
Yeah. In a case where the attorney has made an entry of appearance, they have listed six other attorneys. Are all the attorneys of that firm to be listed as if they are actively working on your case? The reason I ask is because I contacted one of the attorneys listed who said he is no longer with the firm and has never participated in it and knew nothing about the case but has continued to be listed since then.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there either.
But they don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know what the situation is there. And, you know, usually if you go to some firm or something and you get a lawyer, there'll be one lawyer. The other lawyers will back him up. Maybe he goes on vacation or something like that. And after being caught, hey, can you go to get to court for me, that kind of thing. So maybe that kind of thing goes on, of course, inside of a firm. But I don't know anything else other than that kind of a situation. So I don't know.
Okay, last question. On yesterday's episode of X22 Political Report, there was an article from FX Hedge that equivocated the National Guard to the militia. It stated under 10 U.S.C. section 1231A, has our militia been antiquated or replaced? Your comments, please.
Long time ago, early 1900 or late 1800s, I forget exactly when. Let me think about this. Yeah,
1903.
Yeah, early 1900s. Thank you. And so the National Guard is referred to as the militia, but there are problems with that. I know Brent had spoken on that problem with the National Guard. They don't really fit the bill properly. And I know when they sent the National Guard out to fight war in the Iraq situation and others, okay, there was a big debate and argument from the leadership of the National Guard saying, we're here to protect the nation. We're not here to go. You have a military for that. This is our job, protecting the mainland. And of course, they lost the battle and they were sent anyway, because these people have the guns and they do what they please. And
they have
the guns and do what they please until the people get up and take the power back.
I think in an emergency, the president can federalize the National Guard, and that's kind of what's happening.
He cannot send them out of the country. That's not, the National Guard is supposed to be the militia, which, again, it has problems. There are problems.
And didn't a bunch of states just pass laws against militias that they get? I mean, it's so ridiculous. Well, that it's illegal to start or talk about a militia now.
Well, look at that. Why not? Let them get rid of the militia, because they can get rid of guns, too. They get rid of the Second Amendment. The militias.
Yeah, they can get rid of whatever they want. A mob rule. They get the votes.
They don't have the First Amendment anymore, they think, also. So they've gotten rid of that. Your Seventh Amendment right of due process by in a court of record, to defend yourself in a court of record, you know, they got rid of that. Due process, they got rid of that. Taking you to court and getting a warrant, not only for your arrest, but to take your things like the IRS does all day long, they got rid of that. So, hey, they got rid of all of it. People need to wake up. You don't have a Constitution no more. You don't have a Bill of Rights no more. And the only way we're going to get it back, the people step up. And I'm telling you right now, there is a void, and they've filled that void and taken total control. But there's a void that the people are going to have to fill. And if they don't fill it by the time we take this nation back, then it will be filled by them again and not you, the people. So people just don't seem to be ready to give up their time to maybe go to a meeting once a month and participate in different problems that affect them, politically speaking, judicially speaking, within their counties. So if you're not willing to do that, then you're not willing to have government by consent, and we're not going to have it. This is a people failure, as it is of anything else. It is true that they dumbed us down, they removed our proper education, and so on and so forth. I mean, all that is true, okay? Nevertheless, it's a people problem. We caused our own problem by not stepping up and doing what we have to do and getting involved and trying to figure things out. But it is a problem when people aren't educated, and that was a major problem why people fell away from doing their duty.
You know, I was thinking about what Gerard said, federalizing. the president can federalize the National Guard. I was thinking about this the other day. Maybe it's just a more 5D chess that Trump is playing, and he wanted to bring this up because with the militia, remember that both the governor of that state and the president have concurrent jurisdiction, so whoever calls them out first gets
right.
them.
Right, first one.
I believe Trump has already done that. He's already federalized the militia in the sense that he's taken power and authority over them. And when he left office, he put forward a lot of things that were at a high watch, if you know what you
mean. Well, yeah, they're on an emergency order, and they're deploying them all over the place. That started with Trump. Yeah.
So that's all going on. There's nothing wrong with that. Constitution gives the power to the President of the United States to do it. But the Constitution does not give the power to any president or any governor or anybody. The only place really would be the presidency to take the militia and send them out of the mainland, out of the country, in order to fight a war, okay, to defend someone else's borders or whatever it is that they're doing. It doesn't matter. Now that's the military's job. We have the Marines, we have the Navy, we have the Air Force, we have the Army, and of course now we have the Space Force. That's their job. It's not National Guard. They got National Guard out, I think, in my opinion, because I think they were getting ready to potentially take things down. But by getting the National Guard totally exhausted and out of the country would be one way to take this nation by force. And I think the cards weren't lined in such a way that they could do that back then. And that started, of course, in 1990. Or 91, somewhere in there. They cannot send the National Guard out. The purpose of the National Guard is to guard the nation, period. It's in the name, too. But militia is a proper name and a better name, and there is some other things that need to be done to make it more lawful. And I do know, as a matter of fact, Brent Winters is going to be given a course on that. So anybody that wants to get into that course, just send us an email to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and just mention I want to get into that militia course, and make sure you give me, well, we'll have your email, but put it inside anyway. We'll have your email, but make sure, of course, you at least your first name is in there and your phone number. I'll pass that information to Brent. He'll make contact with you. And if you want to get into that course, you can get into the course. I think that course is going to be starting in about 2 weeks. And it'll be a weekly course. I believe he does it on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Because I know I've gone to a couple of his courses, and he usually runs it on a Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And it is recorded. So if you're unable to make some of these courses or whatever, or all of them, you know, you do get an email giving you a link to the course, the recorded part of that course for that particular week or whatever the case may be. So anyway, and if Brent comes in tonight, maybe we can raise that question to Brent, and he could be more specific. He has far more knowledge on the militia than I do. And if not, again, he'll probably be here next week anyway, but. Anyway, next question.
That's the end, John. There are no more questions.
That's the end. So we spilled it all out, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of things before we move on. Let me see. You mentioned that we had that interview with S.G. Anand, and it was the first of probably a three-part interview. We're waiting for him to get back to us, and hopefully this week we'll be doing part two. And part two is going to focus particularly on building committees of safety. We're going to give a little bit on education, but not much. We're really going to focus in on, forming what NLA is really doing. Creating committees of safety, getting people together in the counties to become administrators. We need four administrators and a paralegal who is also an administrator. So we need five, actually. One of them has to be a paralegal in every county in order to take control of the courts. And we do anticipate them taking control of the courts as soon as we get to the other side. So now is the time of preparation, organization, communications between us, and education. We need to be doing those things now. We can't be wasting time. We need to be prepared to take power and authority at some point in time. And I think at some point in time will be definitely by the end of this year, but maybe earlier than that. That possibility is there. So people should need to get involved in this and need to get educated. So, but we'll be talking about that, particularly creating committees of safety and taking back the courts to jury administrators. The third part will be focusing on education. And I think, I hope that we're going to get a much bigger response than we've got off the first part. Because the first part was general information. When people really get to see the big plan, what exactly NLA is doing, and how we plan to accomplish it, and how it's the only way to save the nation, and how it's your duty to do something, when they see that, which is what I believe we're going to get into the next part, I think that's going to, you know, really get a bigger response than we've got off the first part. And then the third part, which is an education, I think that's going to be even another pump, so to speak, in order to bring us closer to critical mass. NLA has to achieve two things to be successful. And one is to reach critical mass. And critical mass is met by getting out there with interviews. I think, with SG, that's going to give us, it's given us a lot of exposure. But we're expecting to get more exposure by people who have their podcast and listening to SG, and they have their own podcast going and their own thing, and they got lots of members, and they invite us and give us an interview, and they get the information. It's also up to the people that are coming every Monday. Everybody should be bringing a friend. Bring somebody, you know, to this meeting. See if we can get them involved. Show them the website. Explain to them, you know, the two things, the education and the start a committee of safety. Get them into those two tabs. Have them read our front page and watch the videos. You know, probably a really interesting education beginning anyway to come in is to take our foundation study. And it's a foundation study. It's all videos, just watching videos, very powerful videos, which will give you a lot of knowledge, a lot of information. So once people go through that foundational study, I think that'll really, you know, pump them up to get more involved, and they'll go through and get through the rest of the things. You know, Constitutional Course 101, extremely important. It's the beginning. It's only the beginning. You know, we've got Free Civics Course. Again, how did we get here? How did the United States of America get to where we're at? How did it happen? How did they take control of us? I mean, we answer those questions in the civils course through different videos Ed Griffin. He's probably got about 24, 25, or 20 some odd documentaries he's done over the years. I think his first documentary was 1959. So he's one of the pioneers. And he has documented these things and laid out exactly what they're doing. He didn't have a solution, but he did expose the problem. We owe a lot to Ed Griffin for the work he's done, because everyone else is standing on his shoulders, whether people realize it or not, as far as getting this information out, particularly on the Internet, because the Internet really spread his work out. But anyway, we have all of his videos in this course, powerful, powerful videos. And you'll then understand how this whole thing happened. There's one interview that is kind of very interesting, and it's... Goodness, what's this guy's name? Let me think. His name slipped for me. I can't think of his name. But anyway, he revealed what was going on with the trust. You know who I'm talking about, Gerard. If I think about it, I'll shadow out my day. So anyway, people need to do things, okay? And that's what we need. We need to hit critical mass, and the other thing we need is to go professional. We're not going to be able to go professional until we go critical mass and people are giving us $5 a month or more, and we're accumulating enough money to be able to pay people to go professional. Or someone with deep pockets hears about us, looks into it, and says, hey, this is a place where I need to stick my money. You know, because there are a lot of people out there with a lot of money that are doing things for whatever purposes. And I'm sure if people are looking at that money for something that is really valuable and really important and, you know, to save this republic and realize that that's what this is all about, then I think they'll fork up the money and we'll go professional. So we're looking for those two things. We trust we'll probably reach them eventually, hopefully sooner than later. Okay, so anyway, part two on STNN is going to be focusing in on what our plan is, and part three will be a deep look at the education that we give. Now, there is another thing we had brought up a week or two ago, and that was Gorsuch statement and paper. We did file that paper, and I did take it down, and I put another paper up there. Let me see if I can find this. Under education starts here, come down to the law, and then come over to court forms and process. I stuck it in that area. And if you come into that area, you scroll down where you see the Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial. That's what this was all about. Now, the website I went out to read really was not put very together well, how they produced this. And it looked like Gorsuch was saying a lot more than what he actually did say. But this is the actual case that I went out and researched and found. It's SEC versus Jotsky. And we got the docket number, and when it was argued 11/29/23, so it was last year. And I'm going to read this because it was it needs correction because people had read the first one thinking that he said all those things, and he didn't. Okay, so this is what Gorsuch said. Justice Gorsuch, this is in the case, and there's a conversation. This is the case. So, Mr. Fletcher, with respect to your argument that Congress can move something from courts into agencies and the Seventh Amendment doesn't speak to that because it's not a suit, I think Noel Webster described a suit as an any action or process for the recovery of a right of a claim before any tribunal, which would seem to be a problem. That's a pretty contemporaneous definition. And then Justice Brennan in Grand Financiera, I don't know how to pronounce that, but let me see, Grand Financiera, I guess that's the best I'm going to do. That case, I think, addressed your argument pretty squarely when he said Congress cannot eliminate a party's Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial merely by relabeling the cause of an action and placing jurisdiction in administrative agency. Thoughts? And so Mr. Fletcher's response is, yeah. So I think that's still inconsistent with what the court has said in that case, Grand Financiera. Justice Gorsuch, I just quoted from Grand Financiera. Mr. Fletcher, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I don't think that's what the court held in Grand Financiera. It's inconsistent with what the court said. Justice Gorsuch, are you saying I misread it, Mr. Fletcher? Mr. Fletcher, no, Justice Gorsuch. I'm saying, Justice Gorsuch, you said that that's purely taxonomic charge. Is that how you pronounce that? Taxonomic charge. And Mr. Fletcher, yes, Justice Gorsuch. And that's not enough to render it no longer a suit for purposes of the Seventh Amendment, right? Mr. Fletcher, yes, I think in context, Grand Financiera is talking about a proceeding that was in a bankruptcy court in the Article III setting. I think the court's subsequent cases, including oil states, have heritage. Reporting corporation said if you're permissibly in an Article III tribunal, then the Seventh Amendment doesn't have independent work to do. I apologize for misidentifying the case I was relying on. Justice Gorsuch, all right, but it would seem strange, and we don't usually say the government can avoid a constitutional mandate merely by relabeling or moving things around. That's what they do to us all the time, by the way. It is as much a violation to do something indirectly as it is directly, we usually say, right? Maxim of law, and I'm not sure how this played into the case, but this seems to be in here, and this may have been the person who's reporting on this stuck this in. I really don't know. But it says here, maxim of law 4b. He who does a thing by another is considered as doing it himself. Example, the act of an agent, that the acts of the principals, and then it quotes some court cases. And we're very familiar with this and the maxims. And it says here, please take notice that as agency workers, state judges, presiding judges, state legislators, etc., that you are bound by the Constitution, that you have all sworn to uphold. And from this time forward, please be advised that taking children, cars, houses, weapons, rights, property, etc., without a trial by jury in a court of record following the course of the common law is unlawful. Please also take further notice that attorneys who don't have their names on the line, as they are not in the position of serving service and contract with the people presenting you with the idea that it's acceptable or to trample the people's right by device or artifice, does not in any way remove your responsibility for your wrongdoings. Furthermore, there is another element of wrong being committed when you are working in a federal program and make money outside of the norm of your normal salary for carrying out the functions of that program, leaving one with unclean hands on the top of taking property or rights from the people without right. All past cases that bypass the common law are unlawful. Therefore, it is my immediately demand, wish, and order that you restore all that has been unlawfully taken without constitutionally mandated due process and notify all those who harmed or you agree that any wrong that is done in this regard in the future or that has not been corrected from the past trespasses is done purposely with full knowledge, intent, and malice and will be recognized as such by the people whom you swore to serve and protect. This notice is to send to you the peace and love of Jesus Christ, that you may repent and do works worthy of the same. Then he gets another maxim, what a judicial notice is. So my question here is this, because I'm not too sure on this. And, you know, was this inserted, was this part inserted by the individual who reported this on the website, which is it seems to be a lawyer's website, or is this something that is part of what Justice Gorsuch was pushing forward? I find it hard to believe that he would say these things. Very few people would bring up the name of Jesus Christ in a court. Very, very few people. And or even quote Bible verses. We do that. But very few people do that. Now, I passed this on to Brent and asked Brent if he can look into this and maybe shed some more light on what's really going on here and who really said what. So we'll see once I get word back from Brent what he has to say, and hopefully he'll be on tonight or next week, and maybe he'll be able to respond. And I'll ask him to come and respond here in our program so that people can hear from his perspective. He's got far more abilities to look these court cases up than I do. So with that, let me see if there's anything else I wanted to cover. I guess that's the only two things I wanted to, you know, revisit. It was those two items and Gorsuch being the last. Okay, with that, I guess we're going to move on to our first caller. And I'll start things going and take the first caller, Gerard. You want to pick it up after me? Let me get it going, though.
Can you hear me,
sir? I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay, Q&A. First caller is Anthony. Let's see. Let's click on next question. You got the mic, Anthony. Go right ahead. West Virginia, it looks like, right? Anthony from West Virginia, it looks like WV. Yep, West Virginia.
I'm on mute. I muted myself with my phone. I'm right here. I'm right here. I muted myself with my phone. I didn't want to make any noise in case my mic was open when I signed in. So thank you. Thank you, John. Can you hear me all right?
It seems to be repeating. Are you on two different things? Are you on the computer?
Okay, let me do this. Is that better? Is that better? I'm hearing something too, but that's not coming from my house.
Oh, well, let's see who else is it coming from. Someone's got their mic open here?
I don't know.
And I think they closed their mic. Let's try it again. My mic is open, but I have a headset on, so there's no feedback from me.
Yeah, I had my hearing aids on. I think maybe I was getting some feedback from my hearing aids or something, so I took them off and went to the phone.
No, I think it was
someone on speakerphone.
Yeah, I think it was someone else. The mic was open.
Okay. Well, things went very well this evening. I went to a planning commission meeting, and I opened up the idea to the planning commission that we need to do something about preparing for when the illegal immigrants start coming to small, nice towns like where I live here in West Virginia. And, of course, this is something that they've been thinking about. They were glad I brought it up. But it was very interesting because I introduced myself as being a Vietnam veteran, and also I mentioned National Liberty Alliance. Related to patriotism, that I was telling them all the time, patriot, you know. And mm-hmm. they were very, very, everybody started writing down National Liberty Alliance. At least I think that's what they were writing. Talked about the Committee of Safety right there openly at the Planning Commission meeting, invited people. There was only me and one other person there, and the other person was a friend of mine who's a pastor of one of the churches local in the community here, right next to the church I go to. And so we're going to be getting together, doing things, and I believe that we basically kicked off the Mercer County, West Virginia Planning Commission, not planning, the Committee of Safety meetings for, you know, tonight. So it went very well.
Anything else you want to add to that?
Well, things just are looking positive in that way. I've received 5 calls from Texans who... did anybody get my message that your book... I ordered 2 of your books. When you mentioned it 2 weeks ago, I went ahead and ordered those 2 books because I don't own them, and I figured, well, I might as well just own them at least, and they haven't come yet. And this one fellow, Robert, he was saying that other people seem like they're complaining that the books aren't arriving on time. Is there something wrong?
That's an Amazon. That's Amazon. I have no control over that. I did have, a company that I was working with that, they had put together a paperback, okay, and that turned out to be, from my opinion, a real disaster from many, many perspectives. But then I went up and because I don't really have a solid contract with these people who put this book out for me, and so that was, of course, government by consent. There's still people selling that book on the internet, but the book, the hardcover book that I put out, which is the same as the paperback, and it might have a couple of changes in it because I had that opportunity. But anyway, I put that up on Amazon. And I've gotten much better response, a much better product, and a much better price. I mean, you look at this. The paperback is they said they had to charge $45, so they make the decision on that. So on Amazon, I get to make my own number up and decide what I'm going to sell it for, and they produce that book cheaper, okay, than the paperback. Okay, what I pay for a paperback when I buy the books, to mm-hmm. sell personally, they right. produce it even cheaper, a much better quality hardcover book, 8.5 by 11, 550 pages, and far superior in every way. The texture of the paper, the ability to hold up, because it really is a reference book, as much as a book to read.
That book sold me a couple of weeks ago. I said, I got to have that book, those books.
What happens is they do print on demand. And when they print on demand, they probably print a few extra and have it, depending on how sales are going. So sometimes sales go good and sometimes they don't go good. It's been pretty good for quite some time now, but the last couple of months it seems to slow down. But I'm kind of hoping it's going to pick back up again. But the sales are going, and again, when you ordered, they probably just didn't have any printed, and they got to get it onto the assembly line for printing, and they're not going to print just one book at that point. You know, they may print 50 or whatever it is they print, then they'll have them in stock. There's probably a minimum that they have to print to set that up. But that's probably what's happening. You're waiting for the rotation to move back through another series of printing. That's all I
think. That's pretty much what I figured. By the way, my wife and I, we've had a big Berkey water filter here for about 7 or 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And they are really good. The big Berkey filters last for 2 or 3 years. They're not that pricey. I mean, I guess they're going for maybe $450 now, mm-hmm. $500, something like that. But they hold like six quarts. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have one other piece of news, and this is, I just want to run this by you, John, because I'm willing to put up and fund this process myself. I'm into recruiting, okay, and I'm into mobilizing our people. You know, I have Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi, plus I have West Virginia as the state leader, and I'm also coordinating Mercer County. I know that's a lot, and I'm looking for people to help. And what I want to do is use a telephone service that will make phone calls for me, make one phone message, and those phone messages will be sent to all the phone numbers that I have for our NLA members. So it'll save me time having to call them individually. I could make a nice personal note just trying to mobilize them so they can be in touch and get back online and maybe share some of the exciting things that are happening right now that we just talked about this morning. And I wanted to wait and talk to you about that to find out if it's something that you definitely don't want to do. Because if I want to include text messages, it's going to cost me about $14 a month to be able to set this thing up. But I'm willing to go ahead and pay for that just to mobilize some of the people in my district.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. And, you know, what you might want to do is get a hold of Jan and ask for a meeting with the leadership and run some thoughts and ideas on what you might want to say in those things. And they can give you some ideas what you might want to say, and then you can work something out. And whatever you do, kind of keep a record of a breadcrumb trail on how to do it. You know, what you did, step one, step mm-hmm. two, three, step four, whatever, right. and what you okay. put in. And who you contacted, and put it together, and then get that to me, and then I'll, maybe I'll couch it in a different way, but I'll get that up on a starter committee of safety page, and maybe we'll get that. Maybe we'll, you know, also, it's something NLA might want to do also, is to do that kind of thing with phone calls, because that sounds interesting. We already do the emails that they get from us when we send emails out, but... mm-hmm. But, yeah, that sounds interesting, you know, and just record the, you know, written form of what you're doing so others can duplicate it.
Okay, well, I'll send you some basic telephone scripts, maybe 2 or 3 different ideas. And should I wait for your approval or should I just go ahead and...
No, talk with the leadership, though. Like I said, Jan will pull a few people together to discuss. Put together something, your ideas on paper and what you want to say. And run it by them to see if they got ideas or, you know, that can help you, and then go do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Great. I did send out one piece of mail, which was on those books. I sent it to mail at nationalliberalalliance.org. Did any of the leaders get
the books? About the two books?
Right. Okay. So that works. That form of communication works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. And, you know, sometimes I'll answer it, or if I don't answer it, then maybe Jan will pick up on it, or Terry or Gerard or somebody, you know, because there's no, mm-hmm. a lot of us get that mail. Eric, you get that mail too, don't you? the mail, ML at National Liberty Alliance, MAIL?
You know, John, I don't think I do, because I haven't seen an increase in the mail that I was getting prior to you saying I was going to be on that. So maybe Jan or Terry could look again and see, but I don't think I do.
Yeah, you know, the more people on it, and the more people can answer some of those things. When I do answer it, I usually also put as a carbon copy a CC to mail at National Liberty Alliance. So not only to the person am I sending it, I'm sending it to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org also. So when people see that message come in, and then they see an answer went out, because they'll get a mail of the answer that I would have done it or someone else, then everybody knows, okay, that's been answered, or maybe they want to pipe in too some more information or whatever the case may be. But yeah, that is a very good process that we use, and you know, plan or whatever you want to call it, using mail at National Alliance, because a lot of people get it.
That's great, John. Just wanted to verify that. That's about all I got, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it. All right.
You're welcome. We'll keep in touch.
Okay. Gerard, you want to pick up on this, and I'll be here with you for a while, or through the whole thing, I'm not sure. Mr. Gerard, you got to unmute yourself if you're talking. Okay, I'll take the next question. Maybe he'll be back by then. We got a caller. It's a wireless caller, 916 area code. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you. First name and state, please.
Sean, and I'm from California.
Okay.
And I'll try and be brief. So my husband has been incarcerated since he was 19 years old. He's getting ready to turn 60. He was given 2 life sentences for kidnapping, even though he didn't kidnap anyone. And he has been denied parole twice in the past 5 years. The most recent one was a week ago. And the Board of Parole continues to violate his right to due process and make up things that they keep in this file called the confidential memo file to claim reasons for him being unsafe to be out in the community, even though he's been incarcerated 40 years and has not committed one single act of violence, which is pretty much unheard of. He did commit a violent crime, and he admitted to the crime. He pled guilty. He did not have a trial because he didn't want to put his victims through, you know, that. But none of the factors that led up to his crime were mitigated at the time. And I'm just, knowing what's going on in the earth right now, knowing about the Constitution being hijacked, knowing that everything right now is pretty much unlawful, my question is, because I found you guys on SGAnon also recently, and I signed up to be a member, and I've been perusing your website and would love to be more involved, but my priority right now is, how do I get my husband out of prison?
Well, that's an interesting question. It does seem to be awfully long time, 40 years. Now, you said kidnapping. I mean, was there violence involved?
Yes, he raped 4 women. He's not undermining the crime. It was a horrible crime, but he was actually reenacting his own trauma. He spent 16 years in foster care, where he was sexually abused by everybody that was assigned to protect him, including his foster mother, from the time that he was a toddler till he was 6 years old and removed. And he doesn't minimize the crime at all. It was a horrible crime. But he didn't get sentenced to life for rape. He received determinate sentences for the crimes of rape. He was sentenced to life for so-called kidnapping when he asked one of the victims for a ride to drop him off after he committed the crime, and she drove him to, you know, a location where he wanted to go. I think it's a misuse of the crime, kidnapping. I don't think kidnapping, you know, initially was meant to, you know, cover something like that. But regardless of that, he has served his time. He was eligible for parole many years ago based on the minimal earliest parole date or something, MEPD. And, again, he's been a model inmate. and has a ton of support. He's done everything that the prison asked him to do as far as programming. He was in therapy for 5 years. Again, he's never committed a single act of violence in 40 years, but they keep making up these reasons to keep him in. And for example, in 2021, when he went up for parole, they said that they had a confidential memo that in 2018, somebody reported that in 2009, they heard that he raped a cellmate. Like, that's ridiculous. And there's no attempt for him to even know the information that's in there until he goes to the parole board, and there's no opportunity to defend himself. So there's zero due process happening.
Well, that's point number one for at least that kind of a situation. There is another thing with due process that he didn't get, but no one's gotten it probably in 50 or 60 years, and that is for the jury to make the decision on what the penalty
right.
Now,
because
an individual pleads guilty, okay, the question is what that plea of guilty was stress put upon that person to plead guilty, or they pleaded on their own. That's number one. And number two, in order for a person to plead guilty, they need to do this, and it doesn't happen. What I'm going to tell you does not happen, but this is what's supposed to happen. If it's a crime, you must have a trial by jury. You cannot, okay. The government cannot make any decisions concerning your penalty, concerning the facts, concerning the law, or anything applied
right.
to the individual. That has to be the people, we the people. So first
right.
of all, there must be an indictment. So that probably did happen. They probably did indict. I would hope that they did. If they didn't,
okay.
that itself throws that case right out. So
okay.
an indictment, number one. Number two, when an indictment comes in, if that person is put under pressure to make a plea, well, that's a crime by the individuals putting the pressure on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we'll pile everything we can on this guy's going to get 20 years. But you know what? You're guilty, buddy, and we're going to give you four. And we got people in the January 6th thing that's happened to. I've watched this happen ever since I've been involved with the court cases now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common thing. So, but the thing is this, okay? No judge can make a penalty. They make the penalties up. They write all these things. But all of that is that's in their codes, which would be statutes. You know, all of that is within the legislative part of the process and can only be, at best, a suggestion. And it doesn't even belong in there, but it could be, at best, a suggestion. And that suggestion can only be on individuals who have broken the law while in the process of working for a government agency, or if they were operating in some kind of a commercial activity on the federal level, particularly going in between states or within the state or whatever the case may be. So, and again, if at best that legislation can only be a suggestion, and the people would be ignorant to that anyway because they're not studying that and looking into that. Really, it's all about what they think, okay? And so the jury is not only to decide the facts, they're also to decide what the law is, and the statutes can apply upon the people, especially the people who are not operating in those two processes I said. And the third thing is what the penalty is and the restitution, and with the restitution
right.
focus. So those things need to be done. And what they did, if he pleaded guilty, they probably didn't pull a jury in, because
no.
still should come in. They should still hear the plea of the guilty. They should hear the people who want to say something about this case. They may want to quiz or question people that have something to say about this case, and then to make a decision. That's the way that should go. That's common law.
Right.
Okay? But it hasn't been. So there
right.
is potential out for everybody and anybody that's been in jail to begin with. Now, they're not going to want to respond or hear to you. And it's unfortunate. We're going to have a lot of time spent or dealing with the cases of all these people in jail. In my opinion, automatically, just about almost everyone that's in the county jails need to be released immediately.
Right.
If we
right.
got violent people in there, then definitely we have to bring them before a jury and run the process. The indictments must be applied. Most people that are in county jail haven't been indicted, a lot of them, or most of them.
Right.
A lot of people are there on different kinds of commercial infractions, and they're not even driving commercially. There's
right.
all kinds of things with people that are in jail. They need to be released. Now, the state
right.
prison is a different problem. Again, especially if they pleaded guilty, it's never gone through the process correctly. The other thing
right.
is go back to 1850. Let me think if it's 1850. I think it's 1850 with Lysander Spooner. I wrote the book Trial by Jury. It wasn't a book, but it was
essay.
Essay, thank you. It's an essay. So he wrote that essay, and he said at that time there weren't any juries operating properly. Juries are often stacked. If I were to go to review a case like that to try to pull it out, one of the first things I would do is I would want to go back and pull all the records, of course, make sure that there was a jury indictment, see if there's been any jury relationship at all in this case.
Uh-huh.
Sure, there wasn't. And those who have had a jury trial, you'd want to look in order to prove that it's a stacked jury. You want to go back and get the questionnaires of the day, because when they question these individuals with certain questions, we have copies of that, by the way, of what the federal questionnaire is, and we've got it posted up on our website. It probably is under education. And that particular the questionnaire asks questions like, do you carry a weapon, or do you have a license to carry? Anybody in your household, anybody in your family, do you watch Fox TV or Fox News, or do you watch CNN? They ask you all these questions that really you can look at and see this is a political game here. Once that happens, that whole case is done. That jury has been tainted. Okay, so that's another way to deal with a problem that someone has been unlawfully, brought through a system, or brought through a system, and the bottom line is just that it's too extreme.
Let me just give you a little more information if I could. We have filed writs of habeas corpus related to his right to due process being violated in the board, and they just get denied. We went all the way up to, the top court in California. So, like, now what? I mean, this man is not going to spend the rest of his life in prison over my dead body. So what can you teach me that is going to help me get him out of prison?
Yeah, look, the only thing you could do is wait till devolution plays out, which will be sometime.
Okay,
that's number one. Because there's going to be a whole new thing. Look, we're moving.
And I understand that, and I agree. Mm-hmm.
We're moving into the federal courts to bring justice back into our courts, to bring the king back into the court.
Right.
This is God, Jesus Christ.
Right.
And he's the king of our courts. The law that we're under is common law. That brings us to the Bible. It's
right.
Common sense, ultimately, and the application of that which is just. So once we do that and we remove all of these bureaucrats, these judges from making any individual, okay, they don't have the power or the authority to do it. They just took that power and authority.
Right.
And we need to take it back. Because the people need to judge. We don't need anyone to tell us when a law has been broken. Okay? Mm-hmm. Anybody knows plainly. We know the law, and it's written in our hearts. Thou shalt not steal. You don't injure another.
Right.
It's as simple as, love your neighbor as yourself. If you injure your neighbor, then you're liable. The question is it a civil liability or is it a criminal liability?
Right. It was criminal, and he admitted to everything. He's a very honest man. And always has been. But he served his time. He has done everything they asked him to do. He is not a threat to society, and they keep making up reasons to claim that he's a threat. As a matter of fact, his most recent hearing, they said that he has a potential for violence. Well, a potential for violence is not a crime, but also 40 years of being violence-free clearly shows somebody with common sense that he actually doesn't have the potential for violence.
I hate to tell you, but I think there's some, I'm going to call it politics for lack of a better, because that's how politics works. All you need is one person that's in the state, the prison, or in the community that has influence there to say, I don't want him out. Keep him in there. And they will do that. And if you can figure out who that person is and why, that might be another avenue of attack, because it could be just one person that put the word out that has influence over these people in these parole boards and in the prisons.
I agree with you, and I don't even think it needs to be that powerful. I just think it's the crime alone. It's a sex crime, and we all know that everybody,
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be involved with somebody who has a sex crime. But the thing is they're not following their own criteria and mitigating the factors that led up to this crime. He qualifies for youth offender. He was only 19 years old at the time. They never mitigated his factors at the time of sentencing or now in the board two times. And they are required by their own, you know, regulations and by legislation to mitigate these factors, and they're not doing it.
Well, nothing's working.
No.
Everything is FUBAR, so I don't know.
Look, there are two things you need to do, okay?
Okay.
Number one, you got to wait until the devolution plays out. That's number one.
Okay.
Okay, number two, you need to understand due process. Clearly, you need to understand common law. And you can do that by getting the book, Court Access in the Common Law, and or taking a course.
And I am taking your course.
All superior to the book, okay?
Yeah.
So that's the two things you need to do. And once you do that and you get a little further on, you know, you come back and listen to this recording because we post it up on our
website.
Okay, so... Where you get the information to join us on the Monday night call, we also have all of the recordings since we started. Go to recordings. And then you can come to this point and start going through some of the things I mentioned that you're going to want to look up and look into, make some notes, you know, bullet points, and then start your research and pulling things together. So if you prepare now, get educated, you prepare your bullet points, you do your research, you pull all this stuff together, by the time you get to devolution, you could be prepared and ready to go and move on this thing.
Right.
And you go with it. So, but
okay.
I think you can beat it because they did not do it properly. They did not.
Right. So let me ask you one final question. It'll be quick. AB 600 just went into effect on January 1st, which is our next hope that we can file a petition to get him back in for resentencing based on all the criteria that is written in the legislation today he meets. He's been an outstanding citizen in prison. The mitigating factors that were not mitigated at the time of the crime, whatever.
What's this call and when is it due to come up?
Okay, so it just passed on January 1st, and it's called AB 600 resentencing. So previously under 1170D, somebody like the DA who sentenced you or the Department of Corrections could recommend you go back to court for resentencing. But now the inmate himself, as of January 1st, can do that. So that's our next step is we're going to file a petition.
If you're going to go through that process, you're going to want to do your research right away and get the information to lay it out. I would presume that this is going to be lawyers or a judge of some kind that's involved in this and, you know, for resentencing.
It goes to the court, and then the judge has free will to accept it or not.
Right, well, therein is the problem. You know, look at the
right.
Belongs to the people, but it's a process. It's there, and you might be able to, you know, convince the judge if you lay out the law and what really happened, and you know,
right.
But at the end, you might anger them because they don't like to hear that
right.
you do something more than they do, and that they did
right.
all this other stuff, you know. So,
okay.
But you know, but that's I would go get all that info though.
Okay.
So we got to move on, and you're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
John, don't remember or don't forget that if she, with the next SGNON interview, she can also learn how to begin organizing and find like-minded people. So she'll be that much more prepared when we do get to the other side.
Absolutely.
So yes, and I am interested in taking the course for the purpose of becoming one of your jury administrators. I've already sent an email about that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well,
thank you.
You know, do everything you can and get it all together. Gerard, are you ready to take a... I know you were gone for a while. We were trying to get you. But
yeah.
God bless you for what you guys do.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the call.
Uh-huh. Bye.
And by the way, you know, we have a lot of people coming in here on phone numbers. And, you know, I don't know if you... Well, probably coming on the phone. You know, you have apps that you can put on your phone, which you can dead see the desktop. And we also... And if you've got a computer, you can come in on a web browser. You'll learn that also on the page on our Monday Night Call page. So you can come in by a browser, and then there's also an app on the internet. I'm not sure how that one works, whether it works with a browser anyway, which I don't remember. But anyway, there's numerous ways to come in, and people should try to come in where they can view the desktop. Okay, Gerard, you got it. If you want to take the desktop too, take it. But other than that, I'll leave this up.
Yeah, I got nothing to put up there, so whatever, we can leave it for now. Hang on.
I think Tim is unmuted, so hang on a second. No, he's not. You're going to have to hit...
Okay, I hit next question. Okay, Tim, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, you can hear me okay?
Say that again. I didn't hear it.
You can hear me okay?
Yeah, you're all right.
He's coming in low.
Yeah, he's a little low.
Okay, I'll try to... I'll speak and see what happens. So I guess his name is Jan. When you guys were talking about you guys were talking about somewhere close to devolution or something, and talking whatever events, and then he alluded to something about something financial that's going to happen too, and he said it's already started or something.
One of the big banks are going down, Evergrande and that, so that's going to be the beginning of the end. That's a big domino, you know.
The banks are going down.
Yes, they are. The big banks are going down, and it's happening every day. And Evergrande, who like bought everybody else out, is huge. And I guess they just had a crisis yesterday. I think Eric was talking about that. So this is all going to hit at once, and it's going to happen. Once it gets out there, things will start moving fast, you know, as far as the economic downturn.
And then if it's okay to share an idea or a thought that came to me, it seems like when the banks go down, then that's going to take out the IRS too at that time, because they have to be financed with the Federal Reserve. It's an arm of the Federal Reserve.
So absolutely, the IRS technically is already bankrupt. They really have no authority at all, and they're just a skeleton crew. Look, they closed the buildings up in Washington and haven't even opened them since Trump left office. So I don't know what's going on with them, but I think they're going to become less and less in the future, you know. they're going to go down with all the other ABC agencies, from what I can see, from what I hear.
ABC agencies?
Yeah, you know, IRS, EPA, DEC, those are ABC agencies, we call them.
Acronym agencies or lettered agencies, okay, I understand.
Right, EPA, IRS, you know, all those acronyms, those are all federal agencies. They've even lost lawsuits. There were lawsuits that said, look at you guys, you don't have authority over the people. You only have authority over those people that you contracted with, which really cuts down their ability to do much to we the people, if you go by that. And that was the Supreme Court that signed that just about the time that Roe versus Wade went down. That was another case that went down right after that. And everybody kind of like didn't pay attention when they said these administrative agencies don't have the power, blah, blah, blah. That meant everybody. You know what I mean? That case was a lot bigger than people gave it credit for. So it's only a matter of time.
Thank you. Thank you, then.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? That's what you want to know?
I guess for now.
Okay.
And you got four of the callers here, so you might.
Yeah, so we'll move to the next guy. We're getting late too because we want to try to get out of here by 11, but. Okay, next question is a 919. Joanne, you are on. Hello, Joanne. Are you there? I don't hear you.
Yeah, 919 area code. Last four digits, 6401.
I think that's North Carolina 919, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah. Well,
hello, can you hear me?
Oh, there hello? You go. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, my goodness, I'm so desperately trying to get through. I've been I just found out about you a week ago, and I've been trying so hard to get through.
Give us your first name and your state. Is your first name Joanne?
Joanne, North Carolina, yes.
Thank you. Okay. All right, I have what you call.
Okay, I know that we're trying to get the court set up, but I'm having a personal crisis with the court systems, and I appreciate any advice you can give me. I just heard your interview on Telegram last week. I joined. I'm going through your course. I'm working on my affidavit right now. My court case comes up in about a week. I'm trying so hard. I've been on contingencies for a year. I'm just keep trying to push them back so that this devolution thing will save me. But I may have to go through this. And this is the situation that I'm in. There was a house built next door to me, and the guy that moved in, he has been stalking me. He's been shining lights in like every 2 or 3 hours into my bedroom window. He's been following me around, and he has had me arrested twice for stalking him. Everything that he does, he's accusing me of doing. And on top of that, I live in a gated community, so it's not police. It's the security guards that are called company police or something like that, and they can't charge misdemeanors because I've gone to them for him. I'm trespassing on my property. He's done property damage to my property, all kinds of stress and damage for a year. I can't even go into my backyard and take my dogs out to walk without him harassing me, threatening me. His wife a couple of times has hollered at me. I was in my front yard walking my dogs, and she was hollering at me for why was I staring at her. I walk my dogs down my driveway and into my house, and he's yelling things at me. So anyway, he had the first misdemeanor charges. I was detained. I went before the magistrate. I was detained. I was handcuffed, and I was out on bond. And that got contingencies for a while, and then he put a second one out on me. They arrested me again. The second charge was also for stalking. He said that I was continually filming him, and he has put five to seven spy cameras on me in my private area, into my bathroom, into my house, into my backyard. I go out to the house for a second, and he's out there harassing me. And I have an attorney, but I'm really nervous about everything that I'm hearing. I'm scared to death to go to court. I don't feel like I can represent myself at this point because I just don't know enough. I'm trying so hard to learn so fast. So any advice you can give me, I appreciate dearly.
Well, that's a tough one.
What court are you in? What kind of court? Is it a town court, a village court, a county court, a state court?
Well, I looked at the where my name was written, and it wasn't in all caps. And I asked my attorney if it was a municipal court, and he said it was.
Yeah, but okay, so then it sounds like it's a town court. On the top of the paper, it should tell you, you know, town court. It should say city court. It should say village court.
I believe it's the county court.
Okay, what state are you in?
North Carolina.
Okay, so a county court is probably a court of record. Look into the Constitution to see if it's a court of record. And so, you know, if you open up your Constitution and just do a word search for record, you'll find whether there's a court of record or not. And it'll list all the courts that are courts of record in your state. In New York State, county courts are courts of record, which means they can hear certain cases, but they usually give them a minimum. Most courts of cases take place in the town, in the state court that's a court of record. But town courts, village courts, city courts are not courts of record. I know here in New York, New York City is courts of record, so the New York City courts are courts of record. But if it's not a court of record, then they can't give you due process, and you need to file the papers to get out of it. The other thing is if you're in court, have you been indicted?
I don't know what that means.
Has a grand jury come together and put an indictment? Your lawyer should know that. If there's no indictment, there's no charges, case closed, leave me alone. And a jury has to give you an indictment. The other thing is you're going to want to probably try to do some research on this guy, because He sounds like he's a psychopath or a sociopath. You pick your choice on that one, I guess. And if he is, he probably has a record. And he probably has a record.
I have done that. I forgot to tell you. What I found out is that 20 years ago, he was on the police force, and he accused his supervisor of sexual harassment. And several people in the force talked about how vulgar and crude he was, and he was bragging about stripping on camera and some of this other stuff. And the case was dismissed, but the supervisor turned around and sued him, and that's been in court for 20 years.
Okay,
and I tried to talk to his attorney.
That's information you want to bring into the court. Is there anything on you that has a background in problems or anything of that type?
No. I have never been in any kind of trouble like this. I'm just astonished at what kind of trouble I'm in. And if this could be a five-year sentence for one misdemeanor and a five-year sentence for the second misdemeanor.
Well, again, then you have to be indicted. If there's no indictment, you got to find out if you've been indicted. If you haven't been indicted, then they passed all the due process. That case is closed. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't go and look for an indictment, but they probably won't for whatever reasons they've got. Maybe they don't have enough. Well, again, it doesn't take much evidence. It just takes a story to get indicted. Then the jury, would believe the story then. But that's number one. If there's no indictment, then
There's no jury.
What do you mean there's no jury?
I just go before the judge.
Oh, you can move this to federal court for cause for denial of due process under your Seventh Amendment. That's unlawful. It's illegal. You could possibly win the case on that. And you know what? With all the problems we have in the federal courts, situation like this, they'll probably stick up on you because they got to stick up for something for the people. They got to make it look good somewhere. And it's not really going up against the status quo. This is just from their concern. It's just bickering among the people, so they're not going to really, if you're going up against the IRS, you're going up against a government agency or big corporations, big pharma, any of those, well, they're going to maintain the status quo and protect them. But this is not that kind of case. So your lawyer, you can talk to your lawyer about moving this to federal court for cause for denial of due process and the exercise of your Seventh Amendment and also the Fifth Amendment.
The other thing with these local little courts is they have so many weeks or months to indict, and if they don't, they have to dismiss it. And they ignore that all the time. You have to, like John said in the beginning, they have so many days to have a hearing. And if you don't get that hearing, it's done.
Okay,
I've been the one to push it back?
I'm sorry?
I'm the one that's been asking for continuance all along. It's been me that's been saying,
Yeah, but let me read to you something here. You need to understand this. And you need to talk to your lawyer about this. Get a copy of the Constitution. If you don't have one, get a copy.
I don't think it matters if she asks for a continuance. They still got to move forward.
But I'm talking about getting out of this court. She doesn't belong in this court. They don't have the power or the authority.
Right, there's no
grand jury. You haven't been indicted. The people haven't spoken. You can't indict a person without the approval of the people, number one. Number two, you can't try a person without taking them into a jury trial. That's a court of record. It can't be done. This is, your lawyer should know this. Maybe he's a moron. Maybe he's in it for the money. He really doesn't care. Maybe he's, I don't know, whatever else you can think of. But here's the thing. Listen to very carefully and understand what this means. This is the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. Now, an infamous crime is, and judges, and I don't know about judges, but lawyers don't understand this, okay? And lawyers, judges are lawyers also, so, they play all kinds of games with this infamous crime thing. An infamous crime, if you look into Black's Law Dictionary, is a crime that requires a jail sentence. So if you're being pursued to be put into jail for something, then that's an infamous crime, okay? So no person can be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land and naval forces or in a militia or in actual service at the time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy or life of limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against themselves, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process of law starts with the beginning of an affidavit and ends with the decision of a jury. And there's a whole bunch of processes that take place during that whole thing. Okay, and if they try to put a jury in and it's only six people or five people or anything under 12, it's no jury at all. Okay, and again, lawyers are not very bright with this kind of stuff. They never bring it up, or maybe they're not permitted to. The other thing is the Seventh Amendment, and that's the other thing. And when a court case, and this lawyer needs to understand how to couch a case in the federal courts, and he needs to understand you're going to them for them to champion the Constitution. You're not bringing up the case. You're not talking about the problems. You're not talking about anything but the fact that you're not getting due process. There is no indictment. They're putting you in jeopardy of potentially up to 5 years or 10 years in jail. I mean, this is so. So lost, I mean, forget about it. But let's look at the Seventh Amendment. The Seventh Amendment says, in the suits of common law, where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. Now, that's a trial by jury for a civil case, but it goes on. And no fact tried by a jury, and that would include criminal now, shall be otherwise reexamined in any court case in the United States in accordance to the rules of the common law. The point that it brings it to the rules of the common law, the key part of that particular amendment, protects you with the fact that you have the right of a court of record, which is a court that proceeds according to the common law with a jury, okay, and under the rules of the common law, not the rules of the court, not the rules of federal civil procedure, but the rules of common law. And therein is your argument, and that's how it would battle your case. I put a paper for them to cease and desist, okay? And if you head into the federal, and they're not going to do that. So that's when you head into the federal court, you move that case into federal court for the cause, and your wherefore clause is a demand for that case to cease and desist with prejudice, period, end of subject, you're out of there.
So I discuss this with my lawyer, or I have to on my own write these papers that I'm trying to figure out how to
do.
Well,
again, you see, lawyers don't know anything about common law, number one. Number two, lawyers in state courts or county courts, and if you're in a county court, who knows if this lawyer even has any background or knowledge to be able to really, you know, litigate, how come I can't say that word?
Litigate.
Anyway. They may not be able to get in and defend a case, orally speaking, let's put, and in a state court, they may not really be that familiar. You need to know who the lawyer is and what kind of background, what kind of cases they've been, you know, working on. A lot of state lawyers, even a lot of bright ones, when they get into federal court, they get totally lost. Again, it's another problem. But a good lawyer should understand all the processes. And the process doesn't change, really. A court of record, whether it's a state or federal, it's ultimately always the same. But the federal courts have their own rules. The state courts have their own rules. That's a battle to get the rules of common law in place. So, again, you need a lawyer that can move it to federal court for cause and have the case thrown out for denial of due process. And a wherefore clause that says that for them to cease and desist with prejudice, end of subject, because they're not a court of record. You can't be tried in a court of record. Now, if you were in our program a little earlier today, we read from a paper where Gorsuch mentions this, and that, I'll just open up real quick, is under law. Let's see, coming under education, starts here, go to law, get back to law, stay there. Okay, then come down to court forms and process. Okay, and Gorsuch, in an argument or in a Supreme Court argument, mentions the facts that it must be a court of record, okay? And without a court of record, there is no real case, okay? So you can bring this issue up, too. I posted this up on our website. You can drop that down and give it to your lawyer. But your lawyer, you may have to change lawyers if he doesn't understand what needs to be done here.
Hey, quick question for Joanne. Joanne, let me ask you, where did your neighbor, where was he a cop when he was in the force?
Where was he what?
Where was he a cop? Was it in North Carolina?
No, it was in Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. Well, that
Do
changes.
Do I need to go get some information from that case? I have the case number.
Which case?
His case.
Oh, you can go look that up and pull it down and get the case. If it's, you know, it should be a part of a record. You can go to the court and have the case, get a copy of the case.
Well, if
Here's
you get
another
a
question
from North Carolina,
let me ask
to
another
Pennsylvania.
Question here. Joanne, why did you bring up his 20-year court case? Have you brought this up with the police?
With my lawyer, I brought it up with my attorney.
Has your attorney brought it up in the court?
I haven't been to court yet. I've been getting it put off.
Okay.
Let me ask you another question. Did this guy write an affidavit of details?
The plaintiff?
Yeah.
What I received was a packet of police complaints in the mail. It had no letter. It was from his attorney, but it had no letter.
Right, well,
and it seemed...
In order for there to be a case, there must be an affidavit. If there's no sworn affidavit, there is no case. Now, courts proceed without it all the time, but you need to raise that issue, you know, and you need to write an affidavit of fact. Okay, and your lawyer should have told you this and should have worked an affidavit out with you already. And if he hasn't, he's a moron. And most lawyers are morons, unfortunately. Well, maybe fortunately, because they're easy to beat if you can get into courts of record. But in any event, you need to go and do an affidavit and respond. This is what's really happening. And any statement made anywhere, okay, in any of the papers you see, police report or anything, you have to deny those things, and then you have to bring the facts of the matter is that he's deflecting, he's mirroring himself onto you, okay? And maybe if you had cameras going, maybe you'd be able to pick up these things. You know, you mentioned he flashes a light into your bedroom area at night, a certain in the middle of whatever it is. I mean, if you had that on camera, that would be evidence for that.
I do. I have many photos.
And what's your lawyer doing with all this evidence? And what's he doing about an affidavit? I'd get rid of this lawyer if he's not working on these things.
I've met with him, I think, two times, like right before the court date, because he seems to not want to be involved, and he can't remember anything unless I meet with him right before the court date. And he seems uninterested and tired.
I would go ask for my money back because he's a moron. Try to find a lawyer at least that will work with you. The best thing, and this is for a lesson for people listening, they need to understand and realize this. You need to understand the law. Your liberty is in the law. If you don't know the law, you don't know your liberty, you don't know your rights, you don't know anything, and you'll be taken advantage of and you can't defend yourself. You need to be able to go into a court and write your own papers. Now, some people can't articulate themselves well. It's okay. You can pull a lawyer in to assist you. But you need to control your own case. You need to be involved in writing your papers. Nobody knows your case better than you. And if you're very new at this, then, of course, you want to take as much advice in paper writing and things like that from the lawyer to an extent. You need to know when to ignore him. And that's another problem. Well, you have to get a little knowledge and understanding how things work and what's going on in order to say, well, I'm going to ignore you on this one. No, I'm going this way. I'm not going that way. I mean, probably 80% of what a lawyer might tell me to do, I wouldn't do because I'd go a different direction because I'm under the common law. That's where I'm coming in at, and that's how I would proceed, and I would demand it. But I think you can get remedy up on the federal level. First of all, put your case together, okay? Fire your lawyer. Walk into the court, say, hey, look, this guy ain't doing anything for me. He doesn't discuss the case. He doesn't have any details. He didn't work with me on an affidavit. He didn't gather the evidence of the fact that this guy's mirroring. He's the guy that's the problem, not me. And here it is. You just put it together the best you can, and you give it to the court, okay? And here's my affidavit. And, you know, in the course that you're taking, there's a zip file. And a zip file that says footnotes. Click on that, download the footnotes, and then look in there for a court of record. So it'll define a court of record. Look in there on affidavit. It'll define affidavit and give you some information. And some of the things you'll see is that affidavits rule the court. Okay? If an affidavit unrebutted rules the court, period. So once you file your affidavit into the court, you get it into the prosecutor, you get it into the... And is there a prosecutor or just a person, another lawyer representing this guy in that case?
I'm sure there's a prosecutor, but I've never been involved with him at all.
Okay, well, you got to file this paper in the court, and they have to respond, and you have to do it. You have to do it, you know, with a motion, a notice of motion, and the fact that you're making a claim that needs to be responded with within 30 days, and if they don't respond, then they default, and you're out of there. So you need to get this guy, and again. At some point, you don't bring it up right now, but later on you bring it up. Once they default it, that's when you bring up the fact to the judge, hey, affidavit rules the court. We're out of here. We don't belong here no more. They defaulted, okay? My affidavit is the truth. Okay? But you don't have an affidavit. You don't have a rebuttal. You don't have anything.
I'm working on it. I started this today. I'm working on it. Can somebody look at it for me?
Stop giving that guy money and ask for your money back. That's what I would do. And find someone else that will go in and assist you.
So what he tells me, the two times that we've met, is that that these are not stalking charges. And so he really doesn't want to hear the facts or get too involved in them. He looks at the picture and says, this would be a good one.
Whoa, he says they're not what?
The charges are not stalking charges. What the guy is saying I'm doing, my attorney is saying those are not stalking charges. And he's not taking the case seriously, in my opinion, but I don't want to go to jail. His father was an attorney. His father was a judge.
You know what? Why don't you download the MP3 and get the place where we started talking about this problem in this case and play this to him and ask him, you know, you're going to be able to do these things and follow the advice that you're being given here at National Liberty Alliance and see once where he goes with that. But he needs to do something. He can't let it sit. If Dick, who's telling you can go to jail for 5 years twice on two different issues that could put you in jail for 10 years? Who's telling you that?
I had to go before the court initially to see if they were going to appoint me a judge and I or an attorney, and I said I was going to get my own attorney. And that's the first time I heard it. The judge said that this accusation, whatever that's called, has a penalty of up to 5 years in prison. And that's the only time I've ever heard it. My attorney hasn't said that. You know, it came from the judge when I went to this first hearing, I think it was called, and that just scared me to death. And I've been wasting my time for almost a year with another organization.
He's mixing things up. Now, who brought this into the court? A lawyer or a prosecutor?
The way I understand it is it's me versus the state. And the person that's listed on there is the person that arrested me, that is a security officer at the Lake Royal Police, a company police. He's not a sheriff. He's not a deputy. According to them, they don't even have the right to give a misdemeanor.
From the moment Joanne started speaking, I've been thinking this has been gang stalking. And the more she speaks, the more it sounds like gang stalking. So... It's a serious problem. Gerard had alluded to it earlier. I don't know if he meant to, but with the IRS and how he was saying this guy says they'll come and get you. We have a serious gang stalking problem. These judges and these cops, they work together and they put people into a corner and it makes them desperate and they all make money on it. And it is a system and it is a real thing. And there's national groups for this and there's international groups. But we've had reports of this for years and years and years here at NLA. But since she started speaking, I've been thinking gang stalking. It's something I want you to consider, Joanne. I think they might be in collusion with each other. just something to think about. It's a real thing, and it's a real problem, and that might be something else that you're up against, and I yield.
And you know, for the judge to tell you could go to jail for 10 years when you first go in on your first hearing, that sounds like scare tactics to me. And you showed up without an attorney in your first hearing or no? Did you have an attorney there?
No, because the attorney I hired originally went on paternity leave for 3 months, so he was not available to even go with me.
So you showed up without an attorney. Now, also, he could be trying to scare you into getting an attorney by telling you those things. They don't want to mess with you. They'd rather have an attorney make it nice, you know, go in a room and make a deal in the back room. That's the way they want to operate. So if you're in there without an attorney, they just know that that's trouble. You know, and so he may have told you, you know, you can go to jail for 5 years on this one and 5 years on that one. That could have been just to move you along, or maybe he's in one of these groups and he's setting you up. You know what I mean?
Well, first of all, look at you. You're going to want to file a paper that they don't have jurisdiction over you because they're not capable of giving you due process. Number one. Well, again, you need to go to your constitution to find out if a county court is a court of record. Because you can't say that if it's not. But then you got to say that you've been moved into jurisdictions unknown because you're here without an indictment. If this is a criminal case, there has to be an indictment. And in order for there to be indictment, there's got to be sworn affidavits. Okay? That's just the beginning of the whole process. Without that, there is no court case.
Right. That's your first line of questioning to the judge. Is this a criminal case? Has it been indicted? Well, is there a jury being picked?
Where is the indictment?
What my attorney told me is that if I didn't like the result, that he could take it to a jury. So,
look, let me tell you.
It would cost me a lot more money if he does that.
Last time a lawyer told me that, and this is in my days of ignorance of law, okay, I went along with it. And I was up against, the state, and the state won the case, and the whole thing was just a whole sham. It was an administrative court, and they hit me up for $10,000, okay? And so I went back to the lawyer to take it. Well, you got to pay the $10,000 first, and they'll give it back. You're never going to get it back, okay? They'll give it back to you if you win the other thing. Other than that, you can't take it into the state court. So if there's a consequence, okay, then you have to pay that consequence before you could move it. Now, of course, if it's a jail sentence, it's a different story, I would presume, but not necessarily so with these people. Again, you know, I'll tell you, people who don't know the law, especially in the environment we're in today, okay, they're walking on very shaky grounds, and, because any day, people don't realize any day something could happen. The next thing you know, you're being pulled into court, accused of something. Who knows what's going to happen? And you need to be able to know the law and understand what they can do and what they can't do and how things work to be able to defend yourself. If you can't defend yourself, then, you have to go get someone to defend you for you. And are they really defending me? Look, lawyers are greedy. They've been trained to be greedy. Everything is about money. They make way too much money. They're not worth the money that they get. I don't care what it is, what kind of lawyer, who it is, because, you know, one-third of your case for this, if they're going to defend you or this or that. And they charge you a fortune. You know, if you go to federal court, your lawyer is going to want $10,000 or $20,000 right up front. And they don't need that kind of money to begin with, because going in for a challenge of the process of the denial of due process is a very simple one-hearing case. This is nothing that's going to get involved in a court hearing with a jury. The judge is going to look at this, and he's supposed to be there to protect the Constitution. So you're coming up, he's supposed to champion the Constitution in your favor. That's what he's supposed to do. It's a very simple one-paper process. Okay, either the court's going to agree with it or throw it out. And once you make the denial of due process and they can't prove they're giving you due process, you should win. And that case should be shut down with prejudice. So anyway, you know, it's unfortunate that you don't have the knowledge to really be able to run as quickly as you should be able to if you had the knowledge. You know, so you have a lot of work to do. The other thing is as you're challenging and moving these things, try to get as much extensions as you can and continue your education and be able to defend yourself. If you feel it necessary, have a lawyer with you, but they're there to speak on your behalf under certain conditions, and you're going to want to know how he's going to speak and what he's going to present. He needs to understand what the common law is, and you're going to have to teach him. You know, when we get to the other side, we're moving to remove the bar from all courts in of law anywhere. They don't belong, and even equity courts. You know, the original 13th Amendment prevents these lawyers who are bar attorneys from practicing because they have a title, and the title is it's a Esquire.
So my claim of denial of due process, do I take that to the clerk of court, or do I walk into, on the day of my trial, do I walk in and tell it to the judge?
First order of business is to challenge the jurisdiction. And once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven. So the prosecutor's got to prove on paper, not just in conversation, on paper he's got to prove that they have the authority, personam jurisdiction, okay? Subject matter jurisdiction, I wouldn't worry about. They probably have it. But that's questionable, too. Whereas, if they're applying a statute upon you, then I don't know if that court has lawful hearing of the statutes, but then it doesn't have personam jurisdictions because statutes has nothing to do with you. You're under common law. When you go into the Constitution and read that there's two different courts, there's equity courts and there's law courts. A law court is one that proceeds according to the common law. An equity court is also one that proceeds according to the common law under legislation. And that's why the jury has the power and the authority to deny, nullify a law. A law should only be brought up in a case where someone is operating under commercial activities or working for a government agency and has committed a criminal act. And in that process of the criminal act, then they move those courts into a court of record. It's no longer a court of equity. A court of equity is ruled by one judge, okay? And you can push for a jury, though. But the thing is that once they go forward with that process, going back to the court of record, proceeds according to law, common law, and equity also proceeds according to the common law and the rules of common law with legislation. So that's what that's about. Now, you need to understand all that when you go into a court. And I know it's a lot to take in because that's just the tip of the iceberg of what you need to know. And that's why people need to, they should be learning this in school. When you come out of high school, you should already know all these things. Anybody should be able to walk in a court of law and take care of the business. But they don't want that. Lawyers don't want that. And that's why you don't have that education. And it's not that it takes a million years to learn, and it's all, a lot of it is common sense. Once you start to see the process, and you really kind of clicks in on you say, well, that's all logical. This is all common sense. The process of a court of record. And any court procedural process. It's called due process. All right, with that, we got to move on, though, because it's really late. I don't know if you want to continue, Gerard, or shut down. I have a feeling Gerard shut down.
I said I'm here fighting to keep my eyes open. It's 11:30 already, so I don't know how much longer we're going to go here.
All right, I'm going to head out. I got to go to sleep myself. I got to get up in the morning. But, we got to try to keep maybe the calls a little shorter so we can get to everybody and then get back at you with the second question if you want.
Just keep doing your due diligence, Joanne. Keep taking your notes about your neighbor and keep building your case.
I'm a little bit confused of where I'm supposed to, who I'm supposed to address that I did not get due process.
Hey, Joanne, you can come back next week, and in the meantime,
due process is a court that is proceeding according to the common law. That's what due process is, okay? And you get to, if they're going to charge you with something that is a criminal offense that could possibly put you in jail, then they need an indictment, and that's what you're going in for. In the course, if you try to skip ahead and peruse around there, you'll find that kind of paperwork and information, and dealing with challenging the first thing you challenge is the jurisdiction. Okay. Second thing, federal court for cause for denial of due process.
So the only thing I've received is a pink piece of paper where the person that arrested me wrote down what I was being charged for, and that was shining lights, moving shrubbery, and moving a stake. And they're saying that that is stalking when part of the time he wasn't even there.
Who
is that an indictment, or is that just this is why you're being arrested?
Who is interpreting that as such? Who's telling you that that's what it means?
I went before the magistrate, and the she called to have a person from the Lake Worth Police there, and he's the one that read them to me.
Look, go get yourself another lawyer. I think this is a very simple case. A bar attorney could probably deal with this and take away your fear of the fact that you're facing criminal complaint. And you want to do a counterclaim on the individual that filled the papers out, number one. There's so many things you got to do. I mean, you got to examine the case. And a lot of this stuff, you know, it takes experience to some degree. But you really
both attorneys told me not to do a counterclaim because in North Carolina they don't like that.
Go get yourself another lawyer, because the lawyer is not telling you, giving you any good advice. You shouldn't have. I don't even hear anything that would require a criminal situation where you'd go to jail. Shining something in someone's window? Come on, that's ridiculous. Now, yes, you could be fined for that, but go to jail for that? I mean, unless, you know, it's so serious, there's got to be a focus of injury somewhere or the threat of injury somewhere in order for, you know, to move this into a criminal thing, you know.
I used to be a police officer, and he wrote on the paper that anyone with whatever it says in the code, anyone with common knowledge or whatever would know that this is a threat to death.
That's just
shining a light on his deck.
That doesn't mean anything. Look, go get yourself a lawyer that's going to talk to you and put you at rest, because I think you should be able to be put at rest. That's all I can tell you at this point. But get your education, and if this thing drags on for a long period of time, you can eventually take control of it if you really dive deep into your education and understand how these things work.
So I'm diving as deep as I can. Thank you so much for your help.
We have papers in process inside the course on how to move this to federal court for cause, what's a good wherefore clause to write. They need to cease and desist without prejudice. This case has to be dismissed. They don't have the authority. And there's also examples in there in paper for challenging the jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction, and the court has to respond to that. So the prosecutor needs to respond in detail. If they fail to do that, then another default has taken place, and they don't have it. To have jurisdiction over you, they have to prove that they have personam jurisdiction. That must be proved on the paper. That's the law. Okay?
The paper that I received from the person that arrested me, or is there another paper that I never received that has all this information, supposed to have all this information on it?
You don't have enough knowledge to really execute a lot of the things I'm talking about, nor to understand a lot of the things I'm talking about, nor to know where to get the information to learn it other than going through the course. So that puts you in a precarious situation. You now are at the mercy of a lawyer. You got to find a real lawyer. The guy you got doesn't seem like a real lawyer. First of all, lawyers will take cases that they're not qualified to take, you know. That happens all the time. You may get a guy that's practicing, let's say, real estate. I mean, this is really rare for a real estate agent to take on a criminal case, but I'm sure that happens, you know. They see money, they say, they went to school, and they understand the due process to some degree, so they'll take on that case. But they don't have the insight and the eyes to be looking for what they need to be looking for to understand what's really going on and what all the improper processes that are taking place. They just don't have that experience. So you need to find a lawyer that has the right kind of experience to deal with this case. And it doesn't have to be a criminal lawyer. You know, you could go to a one that does civil cases, and they could at least look at this and tell you, hey, this is a civil case. This is not a criminal case. Don't worry. There's no jail here. The other thing is they may look at it and say, well, you know, this is a criminal case. You know, they may try to take it on, but if they don't have criminal background in cases, then you're going to want to get a lawyer that has a background. But I don't think it is criminal. I think you're just misinterpreting and falling into, you know, just BS that this individual is saying. That's what I think. And so because you're ignorant to the processes, you don't know what's going on. So you're confused and concerned and scared. So I understand. Go find out what's going on. And when you do find out, come tell us.
Okay, I'll do my best. Thank you so much for the advice. I appreciate it.
Right. Okay, we went way, way too over, and so we're going to close down now unless you want to hang out, Gerard. No, Gerard? Oh, no, he's still here. Okay.
I got to get out of this chair, though. My back ain't going to take any longer. I can't sit here.
All right. We do have people left in the queue. We'll come back next week.
Same time, same station next week.
And, you know, Brent may be joining us soon, and he'll take some time over, too, so we'll be able to go a little over time in the future.
Yeah. Okay.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.
Yep.
Thank you.